As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hi, I'm James Richardson with a quick word on the audio treats The Athletic have in store this season. 3 times a week you get the award-winning Totally Football Show with the likes of James Horncastle, Raphael Honigstein, Carl Anker and Rory Smith and me. Mark Chapman hosts The Athletic Football Podcast, a flashy 4 times a week with David Ornstein, Adam Crafton and many others. The Athletic Women's Football Podcast will have all the Women's Super League coverage off the back of their brilliant Euros. And The Offside Rule is back too with weekly episodes. That's not all. There are 8 dedicated club shows. There's Adam Hurry's joyous football cliches show, Michael Cox's insightful athletic football tactics podcast, the offbeat TIFO football podcast, and a revamped football manager show too. Ooh. You can get all of these shows wherever you find your podcast or listen ad-free on the Athletic app.
The Athletic.
Is it ridiculous to suggest that Ryan Sessegnon could be so good that he'd make the World Cup? He can make the World Cup squad.
Oh no, that is ridiculous. The second half of that is ridiculous. The first half is Ryan Sessegnon.
England don't have anyone to play on the left.
Yeah, hello everybody and welcome once again to The View from the Lane, the world famous Tottenham Hotspur podcast, the podcast that is award deserving at the very least and is obviously, because we are coming back now for the new season twice a week, so we're at least better than the Batgirl film, which has been thrown into the dustbin. I don't know how upset any of my colleagues are about that, but there you are. My colleagues, they include the full gang, because this is the season predictor bun fight that we promised you last week. So with me today are Jack Pitt Brook, James Moore, Charlie Eccleshare. I'm Danny Kelly. Welcome to the podcast. It is the big predictor, and I happen to think this is perhaps the most difficult football season ever to predict. 5 substitutes, World Cup, all those sorts of things. So while everyone's getting their minds in gear about what we are going to say in the predictions, there was a chance for James. I know that you've been absolutely pawing the ground about another television programme. Obviously, now that Batgirl has been cancelled, the most important thing in your world is the new documentary All or Nothing about Arsenal.
Yeah, another farcical production. I can't, and I'm sure by the time this goes out, most people would have seen this clip of Arteta prepping Arsenal's players for a game away at Anfield by bringing a few sort of medium, I mean, Dan, you're in your music business. They're not massive speakers, though, are
they? It's no Woodstock, is it? Let's be honest.
It wasn't creating, you know, a massive racket. I wouldn't say that was an entirely faithful recreation of the atmosphere at Anfield, which you know, is an overstated thing. And that game was like in October. I don't think there would have been an amazing
Just for those who haven't seen it, he essentially brings out a couple of speakers, the like of which your teenage daughter might have for an eight person party, and plays You'll Never Walk Alone over it. It was hilarious, wasn't it?
But I just can't see, like, one, you're Arsenal and you're purportedly like a massive club, so your players should be like conditioned to play in those kind of matches anyway, surely. And two, that's just like the activity of a non-league manager, like that, like, you know, someone managing Leatherhead or someone going away to a big club in the FA Cup. I mean, it's mad that this guy has done. I can't look, the Spurs Amazon documentary was so embarrassing.
Yeah.
It was really embarrassing. There were some nice bits in it, but it was largely embarrassing. I can't fathom a manager, like a supposedly modern, forward-thinking manager in the year 2022 doing stuff like that, getting the club photographer in to do a team talk.
Well, I think
fine, they won the game.
Yeah.
But I put it to you, Danny. This is the North London Derby last, October, November?
Yeah.
October.
September,
sorry. Thanks, Charlie.
When the atmosphere clearly got to
the other game was
them.
November as well. The game you said was October, Liverpool game was November as well, for the record. Yeah, while I'm correcting you, I may as well do it one day.
The autumn.
Yeah.
The leaves were brown and dying. So they won that game 3-1, but I put it to you that it wasn't that team talk that decided the game. It was Nuno's, where he told the Spurs players, don't bother with midfield.
No.
Don't need one.
No.
That was the decisive team talk for that game.
I mean, first of all, the Arteta's thing there, I think it might have been a kind of message to Julian Nagelsmann, who really does set up extraordinary big screens.
A massive screen, yeah. That's quite cool, though.
And uses drones and all the rest of it. He's way ahead of all the rest of them in gimmicks. I've been down to, where would you even get a speaker that small these days? I haven't owned a speaker that small for 30 years. You know, if it doesn't arrive on the back
Curries?
Of a, on the back of a Pantechnicon, I'm not interested. Yeah, Technics or whatever they're called in those days.
Dixons, yeah. Is that still?
Yeah, one of those. And the second thing is, it reminded me of is the way they used to train police horses, because they wanted to get police horses used to the aggravation they might face in, say, industrial disputes or big football matches. You'd see this film of a gentleman riding, usually a gentleman, often a woman, riding a police horse, and there'd be some other police cadets desultory banging together a couple of pots and pans to try and recreate the atmosphere outside a football ground or at Grumwick's. It was nonsense. It's the one thing you can't replicate. I think, you know, the pressures of penalty shootouts. I understand that, and the blinking crowds. Listen, thank you for bringing that to people's attention. Make sure you see it, everyone. Arteta with his. I mean, it was like when you were at school and somebody had a massive funk box and you still had a sort of transistor radio carrying around with you. It's like the transistor radio moment for everybody. All right, we're going to start from the remainder of this podcast. James and Jack and Charlie and myself will be giving our views, our predictions for this very unpredictable season. Let's start at least, maybe optimistically. I'll start because you're up there, top left on my screen, Charlie. The question I'm going to ask you all to answer, have we, collectively, individually, ever been more optimistic about the start of a Premier League season with Spurs?
Not for a while. It definitely does feel very optimistic, and that's the view. It's been interesting talking to people in and around, and I think that is used correctly there, the club, who there is a real feeling of positivity. I think the players really believe in what they're doing, and having had the full pre-season, there is a real mood of optimism. I mean, I don't know, after, James, you'll remember better than me, after finishing second in 2016-17, I guess, though, that was going into then being at Wembley, wasn't it? So
yeah.
There probably wasn't the same level of optimism.
Yeah, there was definitely... I mean, there was kind of a sense of excitement for the future, but I think in the sort of short to medium term, there was a certain degree of uncertainty. I mean, that was... You know, they ended that season really well. Second half of the season, I think they dropped kind of like 8 points or whatever.
They were incredible.
Yeah, they were in amazing form. It looked in really good nick. Like, it was still broadly a young team and an amazing young manager. But yeah, that uncertainty, like the stadium move, I think at that point definitely did. I would probably have undermined that a little bit. And also, there's a lot to be said for being on an upward trajectory. And that's not to say they weren't at that point. But it feels like over the last 6 to 12 months, they've certainly been on a steeper upward trajectory than they were at that stage.
But even in the kind of first half of the Pochettino era, when Spurs clearly were on an upward trajectory, the extent to which that they were improving didn't really become clear until halfway through each season. Like, they generally, you know, in all 14, 15, 15, 16, 16, 17, they generally started the season quite slowly after a pretty underwhelming transfer market summer. And then it was only about Christmas you, like, realised how good they were. And so I think that what we're having right now is actually feels a bit different from those Pochettino seasons, just because what they've done in the summer is clearly building on the improvements of the second half of last season. Like, even the summer 2016 wasn't a great window. Summer 2017 wasn't a great window. Whereas now I feel like this window allows them to continue to improve. on the progress of the second half of last season.
That's a really good point, because this has been like a momentum builder, whereas a lot of those summers seem to sort of check some of that momentum that had been building. Right. It was a bit of like a reality check of like, oh, we did finish really well, but have we really capitalised?
Oh, we got Vincent Janssen.
Exactly.
Yeah, recently returned for the Holland squad, could well win in the World Cup, we think.
And now playing alongside Toby Alderweireld at Royal Antwerp.
Just a brief moment about that. Yes, that last one when they were moving to Wembley, some of the guts for the optimism was taken out of me just watching the old stadium being knocked down. But that, you know, I, of course they had to move their stadium. You know, that's how the modern world works. But there was so much of me left. I don't just mean finance, but emotion and sweat and blood in some cases in that stadium. I didn't enjoy the next season as much. But now I'm going to do something that I promised myself I would never do, and that is to be influenced by James Moore. My optimism for the new season. I know. My optimism for the new season has been slightly curtailed by the fact that I've come increasingly. Though not completely, but increasingly, to agree that with James's feeling of slight underwhelm about the transfer window. And I say this...
I do think, by the way, I should say, I do think we'll stay up.
Yeah. this new season, incidentally, all things are possible, because we don't know what's going to happen with the substitutes, we don't know what's going to happen with the World Cup. But James, when you, a couple of weeks ago, decided to take some of the air out of our tyres by saying, well, this isn't the greatest ever transfer window, is it? Since then, I think... Arsenal have addressed some of their real issues. Last season, their centre-backs never had a decent partnership. I think Saliba might help that. They might have to play Ben White in the reserves or a right-back, I'm not sure. And their team made lots of chances and didn't score very often. And now they've brought in Gabriel Jesus, who might do that. Chelsea are suddenly, having woken up, they're suddenly going to buy a load of decent players, aren't they? So perhaps, am I wrong to say that the optimism should be tempered by the fact that Spurs haven't yet... This is not a transformative... transfer window. It's transformed the squad, but not the first 11.
But it is, well, I mean, James made that point, and I can see it. But one thing I would say about transformative, yes, it is the squad. I mean, their bench from the last game of last season included Harvey White, Alfie Devine, Matthew Craig, and Dane Scarlett. Half of their outfielders were basically academy kids who'd never played the game. And that wasn't like they had an injury crisis. They had a couple. Their bench this season is so much stronger than that. They're going to have so many good options, assuming they don't have an injury crisis. And with five subs, which we've talked about, I think that is a transformative window. When you're talking about players of the caliber of Richarlison, Højbjerg, Sessegnon, all on the bench, and many, many more. I mean, you're then not even getting to the fact that there'll be Skip on the bench, Mora, etc., Longley. You know, those are really good options to have. I think that's an enormous difference from a team that, A, was good enough to be the third best team from when Conte took over, and they had such limited bench options. I mean, Conte talked about that. He basically didn't feel he could bring people on. So I think that's an enormous improvement. And you're talking about Perisic and Bissouma, who I think are going to come in as automatic starters and be a huge upgrade. So that's two pretty big changes, even just looking at the first 11.
I suppose if I was to try and be as optimistic as I try to be normally, you could add in that the two players they bought in, Benton Kerr and Kulusevski in January, it means that there has been a huge change. So we haven't heard enough from Jack yet. How optimistic are you about Spurs this season?
I think they'll be really good. I think they will probably come third. I think they've got a chance of coming second, maybe, if other things go their way, namely if City or Liverpool have an off year. I think they will be better than Chelsea, Manchester United and Arsenal. I do think that they'll need to be good, though, because I think Tottenham have benefited structurally in the last sort of 6 to 8 years from how bad Arsenal and Man United have been. You know, Arsenal have what? They've been out of the top four for the last 6 years. United, I think, have finished sixth three of the last 6 years. And that's obviously helped Spurs. But I think United and Arsenal will both be quite significantly better next year. I've got no idea how good Chelsea will be this season. I think it's very hard to get a read on them. So Tottenham, I think, will need to be good. It'll be a high bar to finish fourth. But I think there's no reason, I think, to think Tottenham won't be able to do it. I think their target, for me, should be, can they get the famous 86-point mark set by Pochettino's team in 16-17? But I think they can do that.
James, I've talked about your feelings about the transfer window. What about your own optimism? Where do you stand on a scale of Ndombele to Kane?
I mean, I would say, despite what I said the other week, what I really meant was I didn't find it hugely exciting. I certainly take Charlie's point that the squad depth is absolutely crucial in this season more than any other. So I would be incredibly optimistic. And yeah, I would kind of, just to go back to what you were saying before about when were we last as optimistic as this? I can't really remember when. There's kind of being optimistic about Spurs and then there's being optimistic / pessimistic about how good or bad the other teams are going to be. I'm very optimistic that Spurs will be good. I'm not worried about Spurs being really good. The one doubt is that whether Chelsea, Arsenal, Manchester United end up somehow being even better. But I just can't see... Chelsea's the wild card there. I'd agree with Jack. I think Arsenal and Manchester United, I'd be quite, at the moment, quite confident Spurs would be better than, reasonably comfortably. Chelsea, I mean, the way they seem to be approaching the transfer market is pretty crazy. And I can see like them going after big name players right through to the end of August.
Yeah.
I just like them doing something mad and signing like, I don't know, like some massive name player. Yeah, or whoever, or Neymar or Griezmann or whoever, you know, all these big name players who are feasibly available.
Aubameyang is the latest.
Yeah, Aubameyang, right, yeah. I've seen that this morning, yeah. Who obviously worked with Tuchel at
Dortmund, yeah.
I can definitely see them like picking up a couple of big names, and I guess it might be that thing of one, whether that's really what Tuchel wants, and two, whether it all kind of fits together. But it feels like they could be a bit of a wild card. I mean, I actually think they could be. I don't think it's impossible there's a situation where Chelsea are really, really good. Like,
no, yeah. I think they're very high variance, aren't they? They could be really, really good.
They could be up there with those other two. They weren't that far behind those two last season, were they, really? I mean,
They were with them till about like November, December. But they would have finished about 15 points off, if not more.
I mean, this is what's exciting, is that Chelsea have a huge spectrum of variability within the most unpredictable season that I can ever remember. So, you know, we'll say they could go down. They could easily go down, Chelsea.
They could definitely go down. But the point is, if Spurs are better than Arsenal and Manchester United, it would take something insane to not be in the Champions League again, which, you know, it's probably not especially ambitious to say fourth would be a good season for Spurs, given what it's what they've just done. But it would kind of be bottom line, wouldn't it?
Let's go round, and this is a one-word answer, and I'll include myself, and I'll start bottom right with you, James. Where will Spurs finish?
At the moment, I would say third.
Jack?
Third.
Charlie?
Third.
Okay, I've got more fear of Chelsea than I thought I had. Fourth, okay. So to start the season, very quickly, because that's what we've got coming down the pipeline. How exciting. Southampton at home, Chelsea away, this is August, Wolves away, Forest away, and West Ham away. So two home games, three away games. One of those, with all due respect to West Ham, that massive club, against a team that we traditionally struggle against in Chelsea. I think starting the season well is as important as it always is, because you get the same number of points for this game against Wolves as you do for winning the North London Derby in the running. How many points are they going to get, Charlie? You're actually putting your hand up like you're at school, which is very nice.
No, just to make the point that they didn't play Forest last season, obviously, but of the four games they did play last season, Spurs picked up 0 points from these four fixtures.
Wow.
Southampton home, Chelsea away, Wolves home, West Ham away.
Thanks very much for that.
Well, so an early chance to show how far they've come. Obviously, that's slightly random. You know, I think Southampton and Wolves, those home defeats were... I don't think that's because those two teams are just so much better than them, they can't overturn them. But it is quite a quirk of the fixture list.
No, that was really worth interjecting with a lot, because it means that Spurs have got a chance to really, as you say, plaster on a load of points early in the piece. All right,
to Jack's point about 86 points, Spurs need to get an extra 15 this season from what they did last year, which is turning five defeats into five wins. So they could make a good start by turning four of those defeats from last season into wins.
Well, I'll throw it out there. I think they'll get 11 points in August. I suspect they'll draw at Chelsea. I'd be very pleased with a draw at Chelsea, given our timidity against that team at various times last season. And Antonio Conte, I'm not saying he's fixated with them, but he just wants to treat it like another fixture if he possibly can. And I suppose they might draw with West Ham. West Ham have improved and will buy more players between now and then. And I would hope that the big change this season would be that these home fixtures, where teams sit and wait for Spurs, don't be as difficult as they appeared to be last season. And of course, bear in mind, on top of that, the coaches have now had a good while to look at Antonio Conte's system. Teams will, in theory, will be even more difficult for Spurs to break down. But of course, he's had more time to get different players and the system into the players' heads. So for me, 11 points and a really good start to the season. I'm sure.
Is that your one-word answer to that question?
No, that was the previous question. Where will he finish? Now I'm on to the, how many points are going to get in August? Okay. Also, by the way, that's the big microphone sat in front of me. You do realise that, don't you? I don't need directing. What do you think, Chase? How many points?
This might sound pessimistic, having said they'd finish third, but I could see 10 points. Chelsea away, despite what we were saying about Chelsea kind of seeming like they're in a state of flux at the moment, have their first home game of the season being against Spurs, they will be bang up for it, to coin a phrase, and given Spurs' record there, I mean, you'd definitely take a point from that game. I wouldn't be at all surprised if Spurs were to lose. But the rest, I mean, if they beat Southampton, Wolves and Forest, draw at West Ham, which I think is midweek again, I mean, without reading too much into those details, does kind of feel like it makes it a slightly more difficult game for some reason. But a draw there would be decent.
Sorry, so, we're playing in midweek. West Ham, are playing at the weekend?
That's the game.
It's about five miles away.
Late August.
That running track under the lights.
But,
wow.
But it's late August. Does that make a difference? I think maybe it does.
What, the lights? The lights will still be needed at
kickoff.
They
will be on, but it won't have quite the same effect. If it was like November or like February.
No, it'd be like 3 o'clock in the afternoon in a test match when they turn the lights on. There'll be slightly fuzzier shadows on the ground, won't there? How many points, Jack?
I think 10 is okay. I think when people are asked this question, they generally overestimate how many points.
I hope I've done that, yes.
I think Conte would take 10. You know, 6 from the home games, 4 from the away games, I think would be okay. Obviously, it would suck to lose to Chelsea away. But I think, you know, Chelsea away is obviously one of the hardest games this season. If you win at the City Ground and get a point at West Ham, you've kind of done all right. So obviously 11 would be better. But 12 would be even better than 11. I think 10 would be okay.
Six from the home games means we're back into the pattern of last season then, losing one home game in 3 against opposition that you would hope they would beat.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, no?
There's three away games.
I've gone completely mad. Yeah. What about you, Charlie?
Because Jack's saying there that one tends to overestimate, because at the start of this bit, I was remembering, I think the last time we did this was September 2021. I think it was Danny, me, you and James, and that was the Palace away, Chelsea at home, Spurs away, Arsenal away month. And I remember us all saying things like, you know what, I think they could get 7 here. I'm going to go with 7, which obviously proved to be 7 too many. But 11 or 10 feels... Yeah, that certainly feels around par.
Well, 10 puts you at 2 points a game, and if you do that over the season, that's 76.
76.
Usually, you would expect to be kind of comfortably in top 4 at least.
Oh yeah, last 10 easily. Years, you're easy.
That's generally like third rather than fourth, I reckon. Yeah. Nowadays.
Low 70s, early 60s normally gets you fourth nowadays.
Charlie, do you reckon 10? Sorry, Charlie, we got sidetracked. Do you reckon 10 would be okay from those 5?
Yeah. I agree. I mean, I think Chelsea away. I guess, does it matter as well which games you lose? Because in a way, beating Chelsea would be, I think for Conte, he spoke about this in March, saying he really wanted to play Chelsea now, having seen the improvement of his team and having had that horror month where they lost 3 times and didn't score. So I do think that would make such a statement early on if they could beat them. Obviously, then if they were to lose... Like, I think in a way, I'd rather... I think it'd be better for Spurs to beat Chelsea away... and lose to Forest away rather than vice versa. Because what would you... I don't think you'd learn... Like, we know they can beat teams of the calibre of Forest, but to go away to Chelsea and beat them... I know consistency was an issue, so you could say, oh, they haven't resolved that, but I just think beating Chelsea away would be so massive.
Yeah, I mean, again, just the 3 points, but you're right, for the psychology of the team, it would be very important. Well, I'm glad to see we're all very optimistic there. 10 or 11 points, that would be a belting start. That'd be really, really good. Let's widen this out then, because the Spurs are not only playing in the Premier League, and of course the teams who are in Europe are virtually playing a championship style schedule up until the World Cup. They'll play virtually every midweek. There's one or two gaps in there, but virtually every midweek, as well as the weekends, which takes us on to the dreaded T word, the word that obsesses the supporters of other clubs, if not necessarily Spurs fans themselves, trophies. And I'm going to ask you all, what would constitute in the round, holistically, what would constitute a successful season for Spurs coming up? There's another way of phrasing this. Will this podcast win an award before Spurs win a trophy? is one way of looking at it. Jack, what's a successful season for Tottenham this year?
I think top 4 minimum. Beyond that, Well, I used to be of the view that, you know, winning a trophy is contingent, and there's more to football than just winning a trophy. The kind of Pochettino view, mm-hmm. that Spurs shouldn't pursue a trophy for a trophy's sake. But
I hate that so much. I'm sure you do.
Yeah, but I'm kind of now changing my mind a bit. You know, I feel like, what's the point of having Antonio Conte as your manager and having Kane and Son up front if you're not going to win something? So maybe, I'm not saying they need to win a trophy, but obviously it would be
Come on, James, express your hate. Let it out.
James, would you rather come fifth and win the League Cup or come fourth and win
the League Cup? No, not the League Cup. I think I'd rather come...
Yeah, but this is exactly it, isn't it? If you win a trophy, it won't be the right trophy. Everyone will say it's not the right trophy.
Well, we're not talking about... Well, fine. They're obviously on a scale.
You take fifth in the FA Cup over fourth?
I think so, yeah. I think so. Danny, would you?
No. Oddly enough, no.
Wow, the Mr. Europa Conference League himself.
This isn't me taking the piss, but I genuinely think the difference might be that you've seen Spurs win the FA Cup before.
Absolutely.
It was in my lifetime.
My next sentence would have been, new paragraph, the reason I want Spurs to win a trophy, and I'm not one of those we must win a trophy people, because I think winning a trophy in England, as I always say, let's just start with a simple fact. With Newcastle's change of ownership, you are now, if you're Spurs, you are competing for trophies with 11 of the 20 richest clubs in the world. I mean, just think about that for a second. That is what the level of opposition is. And two of those are magnificent football teams in Liverpool and Manchester City.
And a third won the Champions League the season before last in Chelsea.
And it's a firework, wins things which you don't expect them to win.
Yeah. One of them has a bloke who takes speakers to the training ground.
Yeah, a little tiny weeny speakers. They might as well have brought earbuds and just played the noise, you remember, walk and through earbuds. James, you're coming on to my exact point. Why I want Spurs to win a trophy is for the younger people who turn up in their Spurs shirts and are as enthusiastic about the club as I am. But I happen to be around in a golden era. I mean, I think I've seen Spurs in about 15, 16, 17 cup finals over the years. Now, they haven't won all those, but they certainly won a lot of them when I was a younger man. My gluttony is for trophies is somewhat sated, but yes, for the younger gang, I would love, and also the world has changed, hasn't it? You know, social media means that you can't slink about like you used in the past, supporting a team that doesn't do very well because...
Oh, no, fuck that. I don't care. No, that's nonsense. I don't care about that. I just want to watch Spurs win the FA Cup. It's as simple as that. I don't care.
Okay.
I don't care about, you know... man like Smith Rowe on Twitter or whoever. He's like prepubescent dickheads. I'm not fussed about that. I just want Spurs to win the FA Cup. That's it.
It struck me how long it was the other day. This is absolutely true. In that I came out the back door, out into the garden, and saw herself wrestling with a deck chair. And I said, let me do that for you. And, you know, mansplained how you unfurl a deck chair. And I realised that with the exception of some albums... that is the oldest thing I own, is that deck chair. Spurs won the FA Cup in 1991. The following day, I was still so overexcited, I went to some shop somewhere and bought a navy blue and white striped deck chair to celebrate. Now, it's now faded. It's now faded to a kind of Chelsea blue and white deck chair, but it just struck me, because I hadn't been in the garage, I hadn't seen it for a few years. Wow, that is, as I say, one of the oldest things I own, and that was the last time Spurs won the FA Cup. You people weren't even born. It's a desperate thought, isn't it? Desperate thought. What constitutes a successful season, Charlie, for Spurs?
Yeah, I was doing this for, had to do a season preview, which was out, a written piece was out today, and I think if they got top four and nothing else, that would still be successful. That's sort of like the minimum level of success. Like they would be back, they would still be in the Champions League. But ideally, I mean, obviously finishing higher up would mean progress, which would be, you know, a quite significant step. And obviously, but I think finishing, I think anything other than finishing fourth is a bonus rather than a necessity. So that would be my, I think right now, if they finish fourth, that would still be a successful season.
I wonder if on this particular point, Levy and Conte disagree, because clearly for Levy and the sort of long-term future of the club, the most important thing is Champions League. But Conte, I mean, Conte said plenty of times last season, fourth as a target is not enough for him. He really has to feel like he can win something. And he wouldn't still be here if he didn't feel like they had, I think as he puts it, just 1% chance of winning something is what he needs to be there. So I wonder what those, I mean, I'm just speculating here, I don't know, but I wonder what those conversations are internally about targets. And I wonder whether Conte has a different set of targets in his head than Levy.
That is a really good point, actually, because, and I think within finishing fourth, there are quite a lot of ways to do that. I think if they were scrapping around in that bun fight with Arsenal and United, and that was all they were doing this season, and scraped their way into fourth, I certainly don't think Conte would view that as a successful season. If they finished fourth, but are much closer to that top two and have maybe beaten them each and had a run in the Champions League and have sort of re-established themselves around the level they were at in those peak Pochettino years, I think that would be very, very different from if they just finished fourth with 71 points like they did last season and it was went down to the final day. I certainly don't think, as Jack says, I certainly don't think Conte would... I think that would be enough for Conte to be like, well, if this is where we're going, I'm not really up for this.
I do think you can't really be prescriptive about what success is before the start of the season, really. I think realistically, you kind of know at the end from the feel of it that it feels like it's a successful season. And I think if you went back to the end of last season, I mean, getting back into the Champions League would obviously be a success.
Monstrous, wasn't it?
Like in terms of like sort of points and moments, I'm not sure that it should feel like any higher than any of those other seasons under Pochettino. But for some reason, it feels, because of that trajectory, the feel of it is just that it was a really, really good season. So I think, you know, they could finish fourth again, as Charlie says, and do okay in the Champions League, not amazingly well. But I just think at the end, you kind of have a much better idea of what it all means. And it's as much as anything else, it's kind of how they're set for the season afterwards. And you can't like do that forever. You can't constantly say, well, next season we'll do it, next season we'll do it, which to me is kind of what did happen a little bit under Pochettino.
But that's such a good point, because you look at someone like Spurs to an extent last season. You know, Spurs last season was about, right, we've had this horrific year, 2020 to 21, you know, traumatic even. This year's about stabilising. Yes, Champions League would be ideal, but we've got these four monsters in front of us. At that time, United had just finished second, and we thought, you know, I don't think a single person, I think BBC, they had like 30 experts, and I'm not calling them out. Everyone was saying it. Not a single person said Spurs would get top four. So going into last season, you could say, okay, well then fifth would be a great result, best of the rest. Obviously then once you're in that top four fight, it's very disappointing. Leicester, March 2016 or April 2016, Leicester needed what? A point from their last five games to win the title, whatever it was. At that point, clearly not winning the league is a massive disappointment. Going into the start of the season, finishing 17th was an achievement. So things do ebb and flow. That's obviously the most extreme example, but even Spurs last year, I think, is kind of backs up what James is saying. Like, you do get a feel for that. And also because these teams don't operate in isolation. Like James was saying with, you know, how good you can be confident of how Spurs are, but you're in a league. It's not a time trial, you know. And so much of that, like Eric Ten Hag, that could have a huge impact on Spurs this season. And none of us have any idea how that's going to work out,
but also,
really.
Like, apart from Richard Keys. I mean, it doesn't seem especially likely at the moment, but we don't really know what's going to happen with Newcastle between now and the end of the window. Mm. It doesn't seem like they're going to or going to be able to like spend insane money. But even like, I mean, Villa have signed a couple of quite good players, and I think their team on paper is actually now starting to look quite good. West Ham, we know, have been like, broadly speaking, the coming force in the Premier League over the last like three or four seasons. They've gradually been improving, even if their league position hasn't always gone up. Like, you would say their season last season was better than the season before because they went so far in Europe. And they've brought in a couple of good players too. So, I mean, it's not just those six. There are other teams who potentially could pull themselves up into that group as well.
In this season of all seasons, you know, Newcastle having no European football is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. If they all go and sell, which takes me to the other problem very quickly about the season, and that is, I think Spurs are the Champions League teams are the one who have the kind of mad cycle that goes on, because we will see, I guess, because it's the traditional thing to do, Conte resting players in the Premier League because they've got a Champions League game coming up. Whereas logically, they should rest.
He's never really done that.
I can't see that.
Tended to prioritise the league over the Champions League. Well, in that case, partly why he's not got a great Champions League record.
And in that case, I hope he does do that, because let's be fair, you know, Spurs are unlikely. It's not impossible. Spurs are unlikely to win the Champions League. It's a cup competition. Stuff happens in it. You have this thing where you know the story, don't you? You shift heaven and earth to qualify for the Champions League, and then you have to kind of ignore it, if you like, as Conte, you say, will do, in order to try and qualify for it again the following year.
I don't think so. I think that's not the priority. I think the priority will be focus on the league and get 10 points to get through to the next stage of the Champions League. You know,
then you make an assessment, don't you?
Spurs are going to be in pot two of the Champions League. They're probably going to be, and frankly, because of how they've changed pot one, they're going to be better than a lot of teams in pot one. Spurs will be the, I think Spurs will probably be the favourites in their Champions League group, or the best team in their Champions League group. That means that I think they, I mean, like, this might look ridiculously arrogant in a few months' time, but I think Spurs can focus on the Premier League, play slightly less good teams in the Champions League, and progress through to the group stage. All they've got to do, get through the group, get, and then they can worry about the real priorities in February.
Can I just put, Danny, just picking up something you said there, given how good City and Liverpool are, and given the fact that the Champions League, as you say, is a cup competition and there's more variance and Spurs aren't one of the best teams in it, how fair would it be to say that Spurs actually have a better chance of winning the Champions League than the Premier League?
Oh, absolutely. That is definitive. I mean, allowing for the fact that the season's going to be unpredictable, I don't think Spurs can win the Premier League. Could they win the Champions League? Of course they could. Real Madrid, I do not believe that is a great team that Real Madrid have. And yet they took on the best teams in Europe, one after another, and found ways to initially to scrape past them.
Sort of like Liverpool 2005 style.
The most experienced team in terms of like winning the Champions League in the modern era, other than like since that Madrid team of the 50s or 60s, where they won it like 6 and 7 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
In terms of like having players in the team that have won it an absolute shedload of times, and I know a few of them have left, but they've still got Benzema, Kroos, Modric,
Casemiro,
Casemiro, exactly.
I'm not sure I buy in necessarily to this winning DNA thing. I suspect having a great team is more important than having a winning DNA.
I think that experience of winning DNA thing is more of a thing in Europe than it is in the league. To deal with like the two-legged ties, maybe less so without away goals actually. But
yeah,
I definitely think there's a certain mentality that you need.
Not panicking when you go behind and stuff absolutely.
And they were amazing at managing those games last season. The number of times they came back, the number of times it looked like they were fucked, but they actually were in complete control. Incredibly impressive.
I think the number one lesson of the Champions League in the last 5 years is that the way that City and Liverpool play and prepare, which is basically, here's the game plan, learn it, internalise it, do it every week 38 times, and we'll get the most points at the end of the season. That is actually a completely different set of skills from how you win a cup competition. And I think every season I go into the Champions League thinking, well, City and Liverpool are the two best teams in Europe, so I'm sure one of them will win the Champions League.
No, because they can't prepare for the Champions League. Manchester City and Liverpool are in such a competitive league that they cannot guarantee that they're going to qualify through their league position every year. If you're Real Madrid, if you're Bayern Munich, if you're Paris Saint-Germain, your team is bought to be in the Champions League because you know you're going to be in it.
They can guarantee they'll qualify.
Liverpool nearly missed out the season before last.
The season before last they did. True.
The goalkeeper to score a winning goal.
Last season they each could have got 20 points less and still qualified for the Champions League. So there's a fair bit of margin for error.
Well, all right, but let's reverse into the question then. Who is more likelihood then, Charlie, of not qualifying for the Champions League the season after this? Paris Saint-Germain or Manchester City?
No, clearly Manchester City, there's more risk, but I'm saying I still think they have quite a lot of margin for error. They don't have I agree with you, they don't have margin for error if they want to win the league, because them and Liverpool are so ferociously competitive. And when Liverpool aren't winning the league with 92 points, as was the case last season, and whatever it was, 97 in 2018-19 or something ludicrous, I agree with you on the league point. I think on the top four point, they do have. But Jack and James, I mean, do you think Spurs are more likely to win the Premier League or the Champions League?
Well, Champions League, for the reasons you sort of outlined, I would say. And I think also, like, it's more likely Spurs could be in a situation in the second half of the season where they're kind of third or fourth with a decent gap back to whoever's behind and able to kind of focus a bit more on the Champions League. It just feels more likely that it'll be that way round than the...
Well, let's hope there's so much in that position come the World Cup that in January they can buy players to re-up the Champions League side of the things. That'd be great, wouldn't it? Jack, this is going very well. We've now convinced ourselves Spurs have got every chance to win the Champions League.
Look, I don't know what percentage chance Spurs have of winning the Champions League, but would it actually be much higher than their percentage chance of winning the Premier League? The point is that in the same way that West Ham or Newcastle might surprise us by having a good season, there's also the possibility, and I know it's slim, that City or Liverpool will have a bad season. You know, the They've both exhausted themselves over the last 4 or 5 years. They've both brought in a big new number nine. They're both probably also kind of affected by the mental pain of not winning the Champions League. Obviously, City losing in the semis, Liverpool in the final. Maybe they will go into next season wanting to do that rather than focus on the Premier League. You know, City had a bad season in, 2019-20. Liverpool had a bad season in 2020-21. It's not implausible that either of them will be shit this year.
No, I think the key thing is that both need to be. That's what's so hard. It could happen, but I think it's perfectly possible, as you say, because in two of the last three seasons, one of them has had an off year. The challenge for a team like Spurs is you've got these two generational teams, not just one. Mm. And that's actually something Conte said when we spoke to him in Korea, and I was pushing him on, can you win the league? You know, because he raised the comparison of, well, I did it with Inter when Juve had won it for, 10 years before or something. And I said, well, why not then? And his point was, well, it's one thing doing it to one team like Juve, and Juve were kind of coming towards the end of that cycle. The problem is there are these two giants in front of them.
If it can happen to one, it can happen to both.
And then Chelsea might have a great season. I really enjoyed this because we've gone from kind of, I don't know, to suddenly we're choosing between Spurs winning the Premier League and the Champions League. Let's take a quick break. We'll have a quick fire round after this and we'll try and get a feeling for some other issues to do with it. Remind you, everyone, by the way, that this is the last week in which we'll be doing just one of these podcasts. From now on, there will be Monday after the weekend's Premier League fixtures, and then midweek, usually Thursday, but depending on the Champions League, maybe Wednesday as well. But the main thing is we're going from one of these podcasts to two, and if I open the window behind me, I can already hear the peal of church bells across the land in celebration of that fact. You're listening to The View from the Lane.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, welcome back to The View from the Lane with Danny Kelly. That's me and Jack Pitt-Brook and Charlie Eccleshare and James Moore. We've already taken a lot of time discussing Spurs winning the Champions League. So I think we need to try and move through this next round as quickly as possible. I'm going to ask you about 7 or 8 questions, deliberately starting with... it's not fair. I'll start with Jack and we'll go around very quickly. Will Spurs finish above Arsenal, everybody?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Charlie?
Depends on how many times they play You'll Never Walk Alone before games, I suppose. But I'll go with yes.
Okay. I mean, of course, I'm from Islington, so my fear of Arsenal is greater than perhaps than all of yours. And I also lived in that borough under the jackboot of them for many times. I'll say yes. Yeah, I'll say yes. Who will be the best of the so far 6 new signings? James?
Richarlison.
Can you have one sentence on that?
Oh, do you want justification? Okay.
I just think
he's a very good fit for what Spurs needs in squad terms. He's obviously a very good Premier League player. He's like, I think he should really kind of hit the ground running, even though he's suspended for that first game. So I'd be pretty confident he can make a decent impact.
He's going to hit the ground suspended, yeah.
hit the ground banned for running.
Jack, who's going to be the best of the 6 new signings?
Perisic is going to get 10 goals.
Charlie?
Bissouma.
Oh, that's good. We got a complete difference.
Just shows what a great window it's been. Or a bad one. A middling one, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, exactly. It could all be terrible.
For me, it'll be Perisic because he's the best player among them. Though, I'm not allowed two choices. Richarlison. Will we sign anyone else before the window closes? I'm looking to Charlie and Jack here. It may be in the know. Charlie?
Yes.
Any idea where it'll be? Another centre-half?
Could be, if that presents itself. But I think another attacking player is the most likely. And reports from Italy yesterday that we need to sort of see where they go on Udogie. But yes, I think an attacking mid is definitely a priority.
Do you think they will, James? Do they need to make further signings?
You want a more ill-informed take now, do
yes,
you?
Please, yeah.
This is just a theory, but I reckon they're going to try and do something sexy at the end. I think the Spurs are going to go after like a big sexy name at the end of the window. I don't know why, it would be very out of character, but a lot of stuff has happened this summer.
Like Dybala, that sort of situation in 2019.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's like, yes, exactly like that, yes.
Neymar.
Jack.
That'd be great. I'm bang up for that. Neymar, that'd be class. Let's do it.
Sorry, if you're one of those Tottenham aggregators...
Daniel, we'll be listening.
If you're one of those Tottenham aggregator accounts, I am taking the piss.
Yeah. Don't say that. Yeah, that could get us loads of listeners.
Spurs to...
Neymar for Spurs. You heard it here first.
On one of those new...
Such a Conte-type player.
News aggregators, yeah. Totally reformed. Turned up on time for PSG pre-season for the first time in 4 years. So totally reformed. Under Christophe Galtier, about whom more later, everybody. Who will be the breakout star of the season? I don't even know what that word means, but I've been asked to say it. Charlie?
God, that's quite hard because I don't know how much Conte is up for breakout stars. I think he wants established stars. Spence is the only one who you would kind of put in that category. But even I don't know if he'd be breakout as such, because breakout to me implies someone you're not necessarily expecting. But I think of those people, you know, that would be more the sort of Scarlet Divines. But Scarlet's already been loaned. Divine, the plan is that he will be loaned. But I'll go Spence for, you know, want of other options.
Well, I don't think there are very many options here. Does anyone else want to add anything to that?
Is it ridiculous to suggest that Ryan Sessegnon could be so good that he made the World Cup? He can make the World Cup squad.
Oh no, that is ridiculous. The second half of that is ridiculous. The first half is Ryan Sessegnon.
England don't have anyone to play on the left. Like, Luke Shaw and Ben Chilwell were injured for most of last season. England don't have a specialist left-sided player, really. Tyrick Mitchell played there recently for England. If England are playing back three at the World Cup, which I suspect they will, and they're going to want a specialist left wing back who isn't Saka because they want Saka further forward. You know, there's not that many English players playing left wing back for top six teams, but given how well Sessegnon finished the season last season, you know, let's wait and see.
Sessegnon... Actually, in the preview thing I did, I put as player with point to prove, and I don't mean that in a, like, he's been bad, but I think to prove that he can do what Jack's suggesting would be needed, I think, to get in the England squad, to play consistently, stay clear of injuries. I think he needs to show he can do that for a whole season.
But let's be brutal about it. Ryan Sessegnon has yet to prove that he can play in the Premier League. Let's be absolutely brutal about it.
I think he's got
talent and all the rest of it. And this may be a chance for him to prove that.
I would like to see him add a bit more confidence to his game in the final third. I think that's what Perisic is going to have over him, is that Perisic is just goals and will just provide so many goals and assists. And Sessegnon is such a talented player, and I really like watching him play, but he doesn't take people on. He doesn't really go for goal. He doesn't really make that run off the ball to get on the end of something, that kind of thing.
Jack, does your prediction that Perisic is going to be the best signing and score 10 goals not kind of undermine your suggestion that Sessegnon could get into the World Cup squad?
Why should my predictions be internally coherent?
Or mutually exclusive?
You've
got to judge each prediction on its own terms.
Also, what Jack's doing, he's hedging there, because one of those two things
exactly, that is
could
true.
Well,
yeah,
happen.
A good point.
Smart.
That's fine. And I'm glad to do that.
My breakout star, because of the way the season unfolded, I think Oliver Skip is almost starting from scratch again. And we'll see if he gets enough games to be, if he's as good as he was in the first half of last season, people will start to see him again. Because he's disappeared, hasn't he?
He has, but I don't know if you could be breakout star two seasons running.
Oh, I think you can.
I think he's already broken out. I think last season was his breakout season. You can't keep breaking out. You're out already. Or I guess you could say, you're saying he went back in.
Oh, he broke back
now
in.
He's
going to
break out again.
He dug a tunnel and back in. Go on, you were going to say something profound, James.
No. I'll come back to it at the end for the mad predictions.
Because of the let's call it the Vlad Kirikez factor. I have to ask you all. I'll start with you, James. Who will be the worst of the so far six signings?
Right. Firstly, Kirikez was good. Right. He was a better signing than Soldado or Paulinho, so he definitely wasn't the worst of that lot.
That isn't. That is an opinion.
This feels quite unfair.
Yeah, well, maybe don't.
Kirikez was definitely. Sorry, no, wait. Kirikez was definitely better.
Hang on,
than
no. I'm actually beep. I'm reversing into Kirikez was actually good.
A good player, a good footballer.
Don't agree.
Decent. Okay. That game at Old Trafford, remember? He was really good.
So now we get. He was so good we can identify the actual good game he played.
We got man of the match in Spurs 1 at Old Trafford.
Okay.
Tim Sherwood is the manager.
He was definitely better than Paulinho.
Yeah, it's 100%. Right, anyway.
It's the same Paulinho who went on to play for Barcelona, is it?
No, but as a Spurs player.
And look at Barcelona now.
So what did he do? What did Paulinho do for Barcelona?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Let's not get bogged down with Vlad Kirikez again.
It's a stupid question, actually, isn't it?
It is. And I mean, if anyone... I mean, I would say Longley. And I mean, it's all relative. And I just find it hard to believe he's going to be better than Ben Davis.
He's going to be very different to Ben.
He's going to be better than Ben Davis. And if Ben Davis is... he looked good in that friendly last weekend, like bringing the ball out. But Davis has really improved in that area. He's just the one of the six who, given he's only on a loan, I'm not sure he's going to get enough football this season to justify a permanent transfer, and then that'll be it. Whereas like Spence, he might not play loads, but he'll have an opportunity next season or the season after. So the safe bet seems to be Longley to me.
I saw a claim on the internet the other day that Longley was better than Ben Davis. I think Ben Davis was incredible last season.
That may or may not be true, but you're asking me to pick one of six players. That may or may not be true, but you're asking me to pick one of six, and he would seem the logical one.
I think Davis would be first choice.
More slams Longley in podcast. I mean,
Spurs flop.
I think given that the role of the subkeeper over the last 2 years has been king of...
That's the one.
Yeah, but I mean, not as a player, but the sort of king of banter role that Joe Hart and Gallini took to like ducks to water... I'm not sure Foster's got that in his locker. He seems quite serious, so I'm going to go with him. Sort of, and we'll be longing for the days of Joe Hart.
He's no Ben Foster for a laugh, is he? You know.
But now Ben Foster could definitely take on that King of Banter role.
Yeah,
doing his YouTube videos.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Will Conte sign a new contract between now and the end of the season? One word answer. Start with me. Yes. James.
Yes.
Jack.
It's very difficult to do in one word.
I'm going to say
this will be the story that dominates the second half of the season, and I think it is likelier than not that he will end up signing a new deal, but I don't think he'll make it easy.
You couldn't get into a tweet. Charlie, yes or no? Conte signing a new contract?
I'll go yes, but it's very hard to call that one.
In the last of this round robin bit, before we do a bit of blue skying about some of the unlikely things that might happen, what is, in your minds, what is Conte's biggest challenge, contract or no contract, over the next 10 months it will be, won't it? Charlie?
From a personal perspective, not losing his head when they get a result that really upsets him. Although maybe he'd say that helps the team. But I think the biggest worry with Conte is that whilst things are going really well now, we know that if things start to go badly, he could just, you know, really explode. And that works for some teams, but it doesn't work for every team. So I think the biggest challenge is maintaining that equilibrium. And I guess in the way that we talk about players who put in bad tackles, like, yeah, but you take that out of his game, he wouldn't be the same player. And some would probably say that about Conte. But I think that's a challenge for him.
Managing the calendar. The calendar is insane this year. It's awful. Both before the World Cup, it's going to be very tough because, you know, Spurs will go from playing twice a week every week rather from having played once a week every week last season. Then the World Cup and then straight back into football, probably still be in Europe. Players will be physically and mentally exhausted. Conte will have to keep them fit, fresh, motivated, and ready to compete on multiple fronts. It's going to be, you know, it's hard for everyone. It's going to be especially hard for Tottenham, and that's going to be tough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess mine's a tiny sub-variant of that, in that I don't know what's going to happen in the month before the World Cup in club football, because take Spurs. They have at least four players who would genuinely think they've got a chance of winning the World Cup. coming up, and what are their attitudes going to be like? I mean, I'm sure they'll be very professional, but their extra 0.5% that changes matches, will they all be putting it in as they head towards, you know, they will be less than human, because in the case of Son, Kane and Lloris, it'll be their last World Cup, I presume, give or take.
Kane will go to 2026, won't he?
Well, let's say that this could be their last World Cups. Richarlison will probably think he'll get another chance. He's another one who's very interesting, because he currently starts up front for Brazil. But if he spends a lot of time on the bench and Gabriel Jesus gets a lot of goals for Arsenal, then suddenly Vinicius Jr. and Rafinha, either side of who, becomes the question for the Brazilian manager. But I think he's got a... That month running up to the World Cup is going to be very odd, I think, in English football. Big challenges, the biggest challenge for Conte, James?
I would actually say, just to kind of go back to the previous question, I think handling the incessant questions from the likes of Jack and Charlie about the contract, I think will be quite a big test of him.
Both of them primed by you. Let's have it right.
Obviously, yeah. Because there were definitely a couple of moments last season where it felt like he was kind of uncomfortable with scrutiny around those kind of issues, around questions around his future. And I think if he's publicly not quite towing the company line in quite the right way, I think it could make things a bit awkward. Because that will become like, if that isn't a question by the start of the season, that will become a really big question quite quickly, I think.
Whether things are going well or badly is a talking point.
Yeah,
it will
become a massive story really quickly. I think if he doesn't field those questions well, I know some people think that like we as journalists overanalyze all this stuff, but
no. Let's have it right. If he has not signed a new contract by the time the World Cup comes round, not only will it become, as you say, an obsession for people in the media, but it threatens to undermine everything.
Yeah, the players know that he's only got X months left on his contract.
Absolutely. So I think that's it's critical that Levy, I think, and it's not critical that he signs it. It's critical that he says whether he's going to sign it or not.
Well, I just think his kind of body language and demeanour, I think, when answering those questions, I think has to be right. I don't think he can be surly about that, however things are going.
Okay, thank you very much indeed for those relatively quick answers to the quickfire round. And now a last round in which I'll ask you just to predict something that we won't hold anyone to. Because I say, this is a particularly easy thing to do this year because all things are possible. And just to show you, I'll set the bar, shall I? Here's what I think could happen. I think the World Cup comes and goes. England don't do well. Antonio Conte, fed up and no contract, becomes the England manager. Meanwhile, Paris Saint-Germain have fallen out with the next best manager in Europe, who's Christophe Galtier. With all due respect, I don't count Liverpool, Manchester City's managers. They're set in stone, aren't they? Christophe Galtier comes to Spurs because he's a good attacking manager and takes over. And Spurs beat his old club, Paris Saint-Germain, in the Champions League final. Now, I think all that's very likely to happen. Anyone got anything better than that? I don't know.
I've got one here.
Good.
So I wonder if Spurs' season might be derailed because in a World Cup quarterfinal, you've got Argentina's Cristiano Romero up against England's Harry Kane. And in a way reminiscent of the England-Portugal quarterfinal in Gelsenkirchen in 2006, there will be a stamp, a red card, a cheeky wink to a teammate, as let's say Kane. I mean, it could be Kane getting Romero sent off. It's probably likelier than the reverse. But either way, and then this will, you know, a few weeks later, the players will come back to Tottenham for sort of mini pre-season, and then they'll be going to play at Brentford on Boxing Day. And the big questions in all the world's media will be, can Harry Kane and Cristiano Romero play together?
Toxic atmosphere.
After their red card incident in the Al Bayt Stadium or wherever that quarterfinal would be. And obviously, it didn't actually derail Manchester United. They won the next three Premier League titles on the spin with Rooney, Ronaldo and the team together. But it's one to, yeah, that's my wacky prediction for 2022.
It sounds great. I mean, there's also, of course, if the teams play according to the way the bookies have them, it'll be England and France in the quarterfinal. It'll be Kane and Lloris, won't it? I think that's right.
Yeah, so for England to get Argentina in a quarter, one of them would have to not win the group.
Yeah, James, what's your blue sky prediction?
I mean, it wasn't quite as involved as that. My prediction is Dejan Kulusevski to win PFA Player of the Year. There you go. He's not going to the World Cup.
No.
He's now settled at Spurs. He's incredibly good last season. I know we talked about this a lot. It's insane how good he was. After all of you lot were saying he was a bum, a poor couple of games at the start, incredibly good after that. Made such a big impact. The numbers speak for themselves. I've not.
What did you say about him after two games? As a matter of interest.
Doesn't matter.
I think the exact phrase you used was, "If he gets any slower, the actual spinning of the earth will see him going backwards." You said that.
Charlie, how many goals and assists?
It was 5 goals. And I think it was 8 assists.
In not that many matches, really. The fact he's not going to the World Cup, I think, is crucial. When Kane, Son and Richarlison all will go, Lucas, I imagine, won't go either, but we'll see what happens with him. But I just think second half of the season, Kulusevski will be the absolute key player for Spurs. And I think there aren't many elite attacking players in the Premier League who won't be at the World Cup. Obviously, Salah's another one. And I just think that could make quite a big difference second half of the season. So that's my tip. Player of the season, Kulusevski.
Thank you.
For the whole league.
Yeah, PFA and Fans Player of the Year and all the rest of it. Charlie, what's your blue sky prediction?
Just so I go head to head with James, I'll say Kulusevski will actually have a disappointing season, and he ran hot. The narrative will be, you know what, he actually ran hot a bit at the end of last season, and now he's regressed to the mean, and Richarlison takes his place, and Richarlison becomes this huge fans' favourite. And while I'm carrying on with this wacky thread that I haven't thought through, Richarlison ends up outscoring one of Kane or Son, but I'm not sure which.
I tell you, all right, thank you. If Richarlison outscores one of Kane and Son, injuries notwithstanding, then Spurs really will be some kind of football team, won't they?
Well, it depends how that happens, but yeah, in theory.
One thing to add on all this and Richarlison is that, so me, James and Charlie were discussing this on WhatsApp the other day, like the big... Like Spurs have been quite lucky in the last 2 years in the sense that Kane and Son, like since that point just before COVID, where Kane got his hamstring injury at Southampton on New Year's Day 2020, and then Son broke his arm at Villa Park in February 2020, that, you know, they were both injured at the same time. Spurs were terrible at that point, and it wasn't just, you know, obviously it didn't help that, you know, there were other problems in the team, etc. But it's like, even now, as good as Spurs are, if Kane and Son get injured at the same time, Spurs are going to be much, 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 much worse. And they were lucky that didn't happen last season, but it could happen this season. You know, injuries happen, particularly given their schedule. So I do think we've got to keep that in the back of our mind as like a thing that could throw a spanner in the works of this season.
What I would say though now on that though is that how much worse are they set up for that than, say, if Liverpool lost Salah and Diaz, or, I mean, if City lost Haaland and De Bruyne. I mean, obviously City have a much bigger squad, but I think Spurs, at least now, if they lost one of Son or Kane, there's Richarlison who can come in. Even if they lost both of them, which would obviously be a complete disaster, their front three would be what? Moura, Kulusevski and Richarlison.
Yeah.
That's not diabolical as it was two years ago.
No, they can play Perisic in that front three as
or
well.
Or move Perisic forward. Yeah. Like, I feel they're a lot, at least, that, and that's kind of the point I was making at the start about the squad being so much better. I feel they're so much more... They're so much better set up if they were to have that sort of misfortune.
Yeah, hopefully we don't have to see long balls over the head of Lucas Moura again, which is my abiding memory of those kind of pre-COVID weeks and sort of Feb March 2020.
Now Charlie has mentioned Haaland, by the way. Who thinks Kane will score more goals than Haaland this season? More Premier League goals than Haaland? No one looks confident here.
I think he probably will. I think Haaland will score a lot of goals without looking good.
I think Haaland will score like a decent number of goals. For some reason, I feel like he's going to miss loads of chances and score a lot of goals. I think he'll score loads of goals in the Champions League, but maybe not an insane number in the league.
I just think that the goals are so... Spurs' goals are so much more likely to be divided up between two strikers rather than Haaland, who's liable to be getting a lot of the chances for Manchester City, that he may, you know, he may get 22 and Kane and Son, I hope, will get 20 each. That's that. Charlie, we should end there, but of course you're forever pawing the ground with news or the feature in The Athletic that people just have to read this week. Do you want to tell us what you've got coming up?
Well, yeah, this was an interview I did with Eric Dyer and Matt Doherty in Korea that went up on Wednesday, yesterday as we record this, talking essentially about their bromance. They have this very close friendship, and it was really great fun to chat to them about it. And they told me about the film club that they have where before every game, those two and Kane will get together in one of their hotel bedrooms, like a book club, and rotate the choice of one of the three chooses the film. The rule is that two of the three can't have seen it before. They all give it a rating.
That sounds great.
Complete with decimal points, a la their pizza ratings and everything else they rate. But it was just really nice to chat to them in that kind of environment. I think for them, it was quite fun. It was a lot more relaxed, and they rated some of each other's past haircuts and that sort of thing. So yeah, it was good fun. And that's on The Athletic now.
So Dyer likes Uncut Gems, but Doherty doesn't.
Yes. Yeah, and we'll be hearing from those two, some of that interview next week in one of next week's podcasts.
And somewhere in the north of England, Dele Alli reads Charlie's piece and a single teardrop falls onto his handheld device. Just to remind you again, and thank you all for taking part in what at stages we got to the notion of Spurs winning the Champions League. That's a proper season preview, in my opinion. And, of course, from this week onwards, you can hear the podcast twice. Don't forget that. Set whatever alarms you have on your devices. Monday and Thursday will be the general schedule as the View from the Lane returns to twice a week. Meanwhile, as you hear, the thing itself is absolutely larded with great stuff about Spurs. And in case you're not already a subscriber, you should remember that you can sign up to read all of that brilliant Spurs coverage, as well as all the other stuff that's going on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for just £1 a month for 6 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. We'll be back next Monday when we'll revert, as I say, to two shows a week. Thank you for listening now. And thank you for listening in the future.
The Athletic.